What's up, everybody, and welcome back into another episode of the Dapped on Draft podcast. Sorry for no episode yesterday. Your boy had to get some stitches in his back, so I was feeling a little exhausted by the end of the day. So that was fun. Nothing like getting a good old mole removed, but that's a good way to start a podcast. But today we're gonna do some mailbags. So I crowdsourced both the Discord channel and I crowdsourced on X a little bit here. So we've got we narrowed it down to 7 questions here to knock out. So we've got a bunch to get through here. James, are you ready to roll?
I'm ready. Let's get into it.
All right. So first question here comes from JP Acosta of CBS Sports. JP's a good friend of mine as well. So he said, do you think the success of Puka Nacua will lead to more power slot wide receivers being taken earlier? And who are some 2026 wide receivers who fit that kind of mold?
So, yes, I would definitely agree with the premise. I think, you know, that's tangentially related to the fact that being able to win against press is less of a deal breaker than it was 10 years ago. And so I think you can be a little bit more flexible with, you know, the kind of athletes that just you move around the field. As for this class, you know, I think that he's undersized, but I sort of view Mekhi Lemon as a power slot to an extent. I view Elijah Surratt as a power slot, even though he plays exclusively left receiver for Indiana pretty much. But this is honestly, I feel like more of an outside, you know, X heavy class than usual. Jeremy Bernard, I feel like I would feel comfortable with him playing pretty much all three positions.
Those are the
three guys. I could also put Omar Cooper Jr. in that conversation as well.
I think this question like almost lends me to think like who are the 6'2 unathletic guys, right? Because Puka ran like a 4.58 or something like that at the combine. So like
I
don't think it's necessarily the premise of
his testing.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that as well. Surratt was one of two guys. So Surratt is one who I had on my list, mainly because we've talked about, like, every time we bring him up, I'm like, man, I just think he'd be really good in the slot. Man, I think he'd be really good in the slot. Like, just makes a lot of sense. One, because he doesn't win against press very often, and as you've said, that's not a deal breaker. But the ways that he wins, man, it's not separation. Like, he's rarely open. So it is those back shoulders where he's just leveraging away from the defender, or the fade ball that he scored on this past week was just late hands, man. Like, he didn't show his hands to the very last second on that. So a lot of very refined ways that he's winning. And I ultimately do think that he would be better in the slot. And so I think Surratt, the other guy that I have you watched Deshaun Stribling at Ole Miss?
I haven't.
Okay. So he's an Oklahoma State transfer. He's more of like, they play him a lot of like F looks. They play him at X. They'll play him in the slot. They'll play him at Z. They kind of move him all over. He's 6'1", 210. He's a pretty hefty dude, but he's explosive. So Deshaun Stribling is another one that I'm like, ooh, I think some team could get a really awesome value with Stribling because his tape's good. Production in that Ole Miss offense isn't always there right now for him, but I think the tape is good for Stribling. And so I think he's another one that kind of fits that mold as well.
Interesting. I'll check him out.
All right. Next one here. With Auburn center Connor Lue out for the year with a torn ACL and likely going back to school, Connor Lue is like 20 years old as well. So, like, I think it's a pretty good bet that he's going to go back to school.
Yep.
Who is the top center on the board? And could we see another offensive line convert a la Cooper Beebe, Lander Barton, or not Lander Barton? Who am I thinking of? Barton freaking the Duke guy. Graham Barton. Thank you. Jeez. One of those guys. Could we see a convert in this class to be the top center?
So there are actually a lot of players this year at other positions that I think I could see converting to center. I'll just give you my top centers after Connor Lue. I've got Iapani out of Oregon, then Parker Brailsford at 2, Braylon Moore at 3, Logan Jones at 4, and then Jake Slaughter at 5. But I mean, he had a rough game against Miami, a couple rough games. I'm kind of souring on him, and I was never that high on him to begin with. As for potential position changes, I think Trey Zune out of Texas A&M, who plays left tackle for them, another left tackle, Carter Smith out of Indiana. I really have no interest in him at tackle, but I think at center he has that kind of body type. And then I would throw Brian Parker the second from Duke, who's been a dominant run blocker this year.
Yeah, Laulu and Brailsford, definitely the next two centers in line there.
Brailsford is so good.
He is, man. The core strength is in the hands are
and the hands are so quick.
So good, man. So good. So, like, I think we were even getting to a point with Lou's play a little bit down the stretch here where, like, you could sell me on Brailsford as the top center anyway.
You know, before that, I was kind of, like, workshopping a Brailsford OC1 take.
Yeah.
But then I just look at the weight, and I'm like,
a little bit. A little bit concerning there. Can I throw out a wild center convert here? That isn't going to happen.
Jennings Dunker.
Oh, I was going to say Spencer Fano.
Okay, that I can kind of see that.
Yeah, but again, he's going to play tackle first. You fail outside, especially when you're as talented as him. But like everything about him is like, that guy moves like a center. That guy plays like a center. But again, when you're one of the best tackles in the class, you get the chance to fail outside. I'm trying to think if there's any other converts. I don't think Fernando Carmona is necessarily a good enough athlete to kick inside to center. That's probably it. That's probably it. I don't want to force anything else. Yeah. All right. This next one's a fun one. This is from Cam in the Discord. Who has the most rewatchable tape in this class thus far?
All right, you go first. I got a couple that I'm...
Yeah, so in terms of like the highs being super high, which is what I kind of look for in like rewatchability, right? Carnell Tate's got some of the highest highs of any player in this class right now. Like some of the stuff that he's putting on tape is just so much fun and so dominant. It's like, yeah, I could go back to that. I think I know one player that you're going to say, but I'll hold on to that. I won't say that.
Yeah, I mean, the first player that comes to mind is David Bailey.
Okay.
Texas, just an absurd win rate. Like I'm not even talking about the official PFF. It's just like he doesn't really get he doesn't lose very many one-on-one reps, and he is so explosive. He's a tier one athlete, and the concerns about what he gives you as a run defender are absolutely real. But Texas Tech defense has become the first unit that I'm watching every Sunday. So yeah, I would put David Bailey in that tier.
Love it. I love it. I would also say just because like he's legitimately been one of the best players that I've watched 2 weeks in a row. So now he's kind of growing towards the top of my watch list as well. Like Texas safety Jelani McDonald, dude. Like I could watch his tape quite a bit. So I think Jelani McDonald's up in that territory for me as well. I'm kind of scrolling through a list here and seeing if there's anybody that stands out. You mentioned...
You know, well, I went through a few games of Vega, the Penn State guard.
Uh-huh.
And I don't have a finalized like eval, but I really like him. And his tape is fun. Like that block against Oregon where he drove the defender, I think, like 30 yards downfield. That was insane.
Yeah, it really was. For sure.
Who
was.
Who did you think I was going to say?
I thought you were going to say Mansoor Delane.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, corner is my favorite position to watch. So
yeah,
definitely Delane. Definitely got to shout out Zaki Wheatley because he is, you know, I said on Twitter, like single-handedly giving that unit a pulse. Just some of the – he's, I think, probably the best tackling safety in college football, which they've had back-to-back years, or well, they didn't have last year because he was injured. But yeah, it's for all the criticisms you could have of Penn State, they do a great job at safety.
Yeah, I agree. There's some fun running backs in this class, just making stuff happen too, man. It's fun to go back to. But Yeah, I think Carnell Tate, to me right now, it's just like, man, there's just so much stuff that's like so flashy and so fun that I think that's the one I'll stay with. All right. Next one is a quarterback question here. So we've talked in depth about at least the big three names right now at the quarterback position. And those three names don't include Lenore Sellers. We've mm-hmm. been talking about Ty Simpson, Fernando Mendoza, and Dante Moore, in whatever order you want to talk about those guys in. What is the separation between QB1 and QB4 like in this class?
Massive. So my QB1 is Ty Simpson, and he is my number one player overall with a early first round grade. And my QB4 is currently Josh Hoover with a mid third round grade, 60 overall.
So you got Sellers. You got Sellers.
Oh, well, no, I'm saying with the assumption that Sellers goes back to school.
Okay.
Right. So then Sellers has a mid second round grade and is 18th overall.
Yeah. So,
but you could argue lower for Sellers, honestly.
Yeah. So if we're operating under the assumption that Sellers is back to school, yeah, it's even bigger. Even if you consider Sellers in the class, I think there's a tier difference between the three guys that we've talked about who have been able to play at a high level cognitively and get the ball out on time and Sellers. I think there's at least a tier difference there. Like I just went back and charted this past weekend's game against Oklahoma. And yes, it is incredibly difficult to get a clean eval on Sellers because the offensive line is awful. Like, right. Like there are times when, and I think the play calling is pretty bad too. Like there was one sack he took where it was a 3-man concept and they were all running verticals and the tight end and running back were both in for pass pro. So there's no easy button. There's no check down. There's no hot. It's just like, what do you want this guy to do other than die back there? And they brought six. So it was like, okay, this is a great play design, whatever. But I also think there's a lot of times. And again, for a guy like me who I said, like, I could see the growth coming and coming and coming the past 3 weeks, man, it's like the good faith is gone. I think from the Kentucky to LSU to this game, to Oklahoma game, it's like, now I view Sellers firmly as like, go back to school and probably go to a different school. But because there's still a lot of hitches on his throws. Like he's just like the Oklahoma game. He airmailed a couple of pretty easy throws up the hashes. Like the ball's not coming out on time. And I think he's seen it. Like there's a couple of hitches in the Oklahoma game. It's like, why are you hitching? Just get the ball out. And so I do think that there's a tier gap there. For under the assumption that Sellers is going back to school, my QB4 right now would probably be Brennan Sorsby.
Yeah.
Cognitively, he's getting there. Like the quick game stuff is, and that's what I kind of look for. It's like, are you getting the ball out on time? Like that's bare minimum stuff, right? That's the floor raising stuff. And I thought Sorsby's floor was so low for a while, but like he's really starting to build it up. And I'm not a box score scouter, but like I think there's something that goes into having a 19 or it's like an 18-1 interception or touchdown to interception ratio this season as well. So like the ball's being protected. He's a really good athlete, really good frame. The pocket movement stuff is there. So I still think there's a tier difference between those top three and Sorsby, but I will say that I think that Sorsby's coming on a little bit here. And again, with Sorsby, I think that eval will write itself because he's got Baylor and Utah and TCU and BYU still down the stretch here at the Big 12 play. So like, I'm not jumping a shark here by any means, but I will say the tools, the athleticism, the pocket movement stuff, like if that all marries well with the quick game efficiency that we're starting to see come along, like that's a quarterback I can get excited about. I still think right now the gap is pretty wide between the top three and Sorsby for me.
Yep, I think you could definitely make the argument for Sorsby over Hoover. Just want to see a bigger sample size with Sorsby.
Mm-hmm. All right, next one. Who are you out on that the media is still high on?
So it's hard because a lot of when you look at consensus rankings, it's just, I don't say this in a shit-talking way at all, but it's like a lot of them are, there's a two-month lag, you know, delay between consensus rankings and like what actually happens on tape. Because only a few people in the media are updating their boards like in real time. So take that with a grain of salt. Like LT Overton consensus ranking 18. If you actually pulled like everybody that does a draft board right now, he would not be the 18th ranked player, you know? So I don't think that's a super like legitimate ranking. As far as like who is getting publicly hyped,
TJ Parker's the one we come back to all the time.
Right. TJ Parker for sure. Although I liked him over the summer, I think this season. I would say AJ Harris for Penn State, to me, is talented, except he's slow. And there are still just way too many lapses in technique. So I think he's a return to school guy. I would have said probably Connor Liu, which is like a reverse, another reversal of what I thought heading into the year. Yeah, that's probably first guys that come to mind for me.
For me, it's like guys that I wasn't even that high on coming into the season anyway that are still being talked about, and I still haven't quite seen it. Like, we've talked a lot about Mateo Uiagalelei, and I think his last couple games have been...
Have been what?
Suspect.
Really? So I kind of had the opposite take with Mateo, where I was not a huge fan of him, but he started really playing with more power this year. So I'm kind of becoming in on Mateo Uiagalelei.
Yeah. Anthony Walker, or Anthony Hill's another one, the Texas linebacker, that's like, why is this guy still consensus ranked 28? I don't know if he's ever been a top 28 player in this class.
Yeah, like... there are guys that are falling down the consensus board that I never really saw to begin with. You know, Jalen Kilgore out of South Carolina, Malik Muhammad from Texas. I think Harold Perkins, we've talked a little bit about. They're just doing him no favors by playing him at star. There's just such a limited, you know, pathway towards him being a full-time starter.
Uh-huh.
DJ McKinney out of Colorado is a return to school guy, I think.
Domani Jackson is 63 on the consensus board.
Oh, man.
I think Domani Jackson is easily a day three player.
Okay, so now that I'm starting to look at the consensus board, I feel like I'm out on half of this class. I mean, Auburn, Eric Singleton and Xavier Chaplin, I haven't really seen it with them, and I think that's sort of been confirmed this year. Yep. Austin Barber out of Florida, I liked a little bit more heading into the season. He got dusted. Against Cassius Howell, the old 0.0 PFF pass blocking grade, which like there's been a lot of debate about PFF grades. I've never seen an impressive 0.0 performance ever. So
yeah.
And then one more, I would say deny Dennis Sutton. For Penn State. I've talked enough shit about Penn State's defense aside from Zaki Wheatley.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page there. All right. Next one. This is the opposite of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Who do you feel like are extremely undervalued compared to consensus?
I'll let you go on this one. Yeah. Because I kind of feel like took all the answers for the last question.
So I'm scrolling here. Sonny Styles is 30th on the consensus board. Mm-hmm. I think that's like a top 15 player in this class.
Yeah. I mean, Arville Reese is 49th on the consensus board. That's an example of it not updating.
Well, I'm using Mock Draft Database, I think, which just like compiles all of the mock drafts and then medians it out. He's got Arville Reese at 16. So even then, still way too low. Chris Bell at 44. Keith Abney at 47, although I feel like Keith Abney at 47 could be okay, even though I would say I would have him quite a bit higher.
Right, because he doesn't have the size.
Right. But man, he did you watch his tape this week, man? He's coming downhill fast, triggering downhill fast, dude. Emmanuel McNeil Warren at 80. He's going to go way higher than 80. Yeah,
I think Casey Concepcion at 62, I think that's way too low for him. Jake Golde, 164. Cade Piper, the Iowa guard. Chris Johnson, the San Diego State corner. I would say Mateen Iberogba, defensive lineman out of Wake Forest, has a really explosive first step, can win with power. He is 50th on my board, but 315 on the consensus.
Omar Cooper at 187.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we could
go through this and yeah,
we could go through this on both sides, honestly. You know, what do you think about Bear Alexander?
I think he's a fine player. I would have a lot of questions about why you are just burning bridges at every step of the way.
Mm-hmm.
I would have a lot of questions about that.
So he's
like,
you know,
a,
I think
to me,
broken,
he's like a baseline.
Broken out this year. When I watch him, it's like, this would be promising if I was watching a true sophomore, you know?
Yeah.
Where he's like a big guy that's athletic for his size and he makes plays, but as far as like, he isn't playing with NFL caliber technique or anything right now. So it's still I think significant uphill battle to be pro ready. And so, yeah, I mean, to me, he's a fringe day two player, and I think he would qualify for this, but I've seen some early, early hype for him, and I'm not quite on board with that.
He's a former high five star recruit. Yeah. The last two I'll name here, they're both interior offensive linemen. You mentioned Braylon Moore when we were talking about centers. 287 on this board. Najee Harris, 288. So those two interior offensive linemen, I'm way higher on than that.
Yeah, I was watching some more of Florida's O-line. I was catching up on a lot of the units that are just awful. Well, not awful, but, you know, not the teams necessarily and units that I'm rushing to watch every week. And Florida O-line was one of those. But I've been impressed with Najee so far. Bumped up his grade a little bit. Also, we'll shout out Emmanuel Pregnon, the left guard for Oregon. He is really impressed me. He's a great athlete. After not really being into his USC tape at all.
Yep, Wyoming to USC to Oregon. One more. Skylar Bell is sitting at 364.
Yep.
Skylar Bell is a professional receiver, dude, in my opinion. That guy is just a pro's pro. That's another one where I'm like, 364, come on now. Yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah, I mean, Cade Piper's 494. That's probably the craziest one.
That is crazy.
I have him 45th, so my ranking is like almost 10% of the consensus.
And that's why you should listen to the Daft on Draft podcast, because we talk about these guys every week and not every other month.
Yep.
All right. Last question here, and this is a really good one to end on, and it's about Arvell Reese. Do you think that Arvell Reese's situation is so perfect it's inflating his draft stock at all? What do you see his role like at the NFL level? It's a near certainty he'll have less relative talent around him and less creativity in his deployment. Could he look more human in a more basic defense, or is he too good?
This is a really good question.
Yeah.
This is
like the Isaiah Simmons question, right? Like, is he a positionless player, or do you not have, or are you a player without a position?
So I talked about this. I just did an Arvell Reese video on YouTube, and I talked about how I don't really see him as much of a gamble as some of the other like positionless players, because I think if you just want to be boring and play him at Mike, I think he reads the game quickly enough, especially considering his experience. So like, I don't think that just playing him at off-ball linebacker is, you know, any massive, it's not any like projection any more than it is with any other college linebacker. And then the other thing that I would say is, I think this question is valid in the sense of like, what is his pass rushing value? Because he had a few dominant reps, like he that long arm against Illinois, and there's a few of them on tape, but I would like to see a bigger sample size of one-on-one pass rushing reps. So much of his production this year is QB spy stuff, which, unless he has to really turn on the jets and like show off his pursuit speed, a lot of those plays aren't that impressive, where it's just like you hover around the line of scrimmage, wait for the quarterback to break the pocket, tackle him. So yeah, I think like I definitely want to see him just prove it more as a pass rusher. But as far as off ball linebacker work, I actually feel really comfortable with that.
Yeah, same. And then some of the pass rush stuff he's doing is the past couple weeks specifically has been like, okay, this is high. Like the long arm stuff that he's doing is like, even if I was grading him as a full time edge, I'd be like, yeah, that's one of the best long arms in the class.
He's like he's like a combined probably 2 inches away from having two of the best pass breakups that you'll see for a college linebacker. Like there was that quick slant against Illinois, right, where he was right in phase. The ball literally teleports through his forearm, it looks like, on tape. But I feel like if you simulate that play 10 times, it's a pass breakup 9 times out of 10. And then there was a hook drop against Wisconsin where like he ran with the stem vertically, you know, he's pedaling, opens up inside to cover up the in breaker. And then, you know, he's right there with it, sticks his hand out, but it's just an inch away. So I think that he has shown more from a coverage perspective than a lot of college linebackers do. And like, I see him constantly when he's zone dropping, he isn't just covering grass. He knows how to take away routes and how the offense is trying to attack him. So I think that he could be like a three-phase impact guy, which is absolutely worth a top five pick in this year's class.
Have we seen a linebacker like him? Like people are going to want to run to the Micah Parsons comp.
Adrian Cooper.
Okay.
Not stylistically, but as far as like the three-phase impact, like I think I feel similarly about like Adrian Cooper is kind of the speed version of Arvel Reese's, you know, power. But, you know, I my comp is still going to be Leo Chanel.
Yeah, that's the name I was just about. But Leo Chanel is more of a two-phase guy because he can't cover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although he had an insane rep a few weeks ago.
Yeah. I like the Chanel comp because I've said that, like, up to this point, Chanel was the most violent linebacker I've ever evaluated. But now, like, Reese is like, oh, it might be Arvel Reese because Arvel Reese is legitimately just tossing dudes around, bending them over backwards. So it's a lot of fun. All right. Well, we just knocked out 7 questions there in about 30 minutes. We will be back again tomorrow discussing this week. God, we're in week 9. This week 9 slate of college football. So tune into that and we'll break it all down for you. But until then, this has been another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. See ya.